A lot of times the plant-based options are going to be lower in saturated fat, depending on the formulation. And then also they're lower in cholesterol too. So for certain consumers, if those are concerns, the plant-based option would be a better choice.
With plant-based protein becoming more mainstream, curiosity is at an all-time high. What's the science behind these protein sources? How do they compare nutritionally? And with new plant-based options hitting the shelves every day, how do you know what's worth trying? Back for another deep dive into plant-based protein is vegan dietitian, nutrition writer, and author Ryan Geiger. In this episode, we're getting a little more technical, but don't worry, we'll break things down. We've got you covered. We'll unpack key terms, explore the latest trends, and even look at some surprising protein sources like algae and mushrooms. It's time to level up our plant-based protein knowledge. Welcome back to Ginger's Plate. Since we're talking all things plant-based protein today, I have an easy protein-packed recipe that you're gonna love: chocolate avocado ice cream. I know that avocado and chocolate might sound like an unexpected combo, but trust me, it makes for the creamiest, most delicious treat, all while giving you a boost of plant-based protein and healthy fats. The ingredients are really simple and you can find them all in the show notes. What you're gonna do is just toss everything into a blender with ice, blend it until it's smooth, and enjoy. For this recipe and more plant-powered creations, head to orgain.com and click the recipes tab. We talked a little bit in the last episode about complete proteins and how you can actually get all the amino acids you need from plant-based foods. Amino acids are the building blocks of proteins. There's 20, and they're essential for lots of different body functions, like building and repairing tissues and muscles, producing enzymes and hormones. And then 9 of them are essential. But bioavailability is really important because it refers to the proportion of nutrients, that's vitamins, minerals, or even amino acids, that can enter the bloodstream and are available for the body to use. So in the context of protein, it specifically refers to how effectively the body can absorb and utilize the amino acids in the protein source. So when people are talking about bioavailability of protein, can you speak to the difference between plant-based and animal-based proteins?
So each food is going to have a different bioavailability, and also the preparation method is going to have an influence. It's calculated by how much nitrogen the body absorbs versus how much we excrete. So if our bodies are absorbing like 92% of the nitrogen, then the bioavailability is going to be like rated as 92%. So for plant-based sources with the highest scores, it's peanut butter is at the top and it has a bioavailability of 95, and tofu has a bioavailability score of 92. And in comparison, animal products like beef and fish both have scores of 94. So they're pretty similar. And a one tip or a trick for increasing the bioavailability for plant-based foods is starting to help the proteins break down. And that can be done by soaking, sprouting, and fermenting. And the research shows that doing those three things can help increase the bioavailability by up to 25 to 30%. And that mostly is important with proteins like the beans, legumes, because their scores are a little bit lower, usually like 70 to 80.
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up because peanut butters and peanuts, they're a little bit under fire and I hear lots of negative stuff about them. And my understanding is very similar to other types of nuts and seeds and really deserves a place in plant-based diets. Do you soak and sprout? Can you tell me more about how you do that?
Soaking of beans is something that I like to do, and they cook really well in an Instant Pot or slow cooker. And fun fact, when you cook them in that way, it also continues to break down the protein, so makes it even more bioavailable than just the soaking itself. So it's kind of twofold. That's the way that I usually do it. Sometimes canned beans, you're in a hurry, but that is typically the route I would take. And sprouting, I don't do it all of the time, but if I do, it's so cool. You could do it with like red lentils. You put them in a jar, you rinse them, set it upside down so it drains off. And then once they start sprouting, it's the coolest thing ever. So it's like a really fun science experiment at home.
I love that. It sounds like a fun thing to do, like if you had kids or if you're trying to get more into cooking. I'm also very interested in digestibility because plant-based proteins have a lot of fiber. I think it's a huge benefit of the protein, but also could affect digesting.
Yeah, it definitely can because of that high fiber amount. And it's something that I see often with new vegan patients. If they're not having a lot of fiber before they go vegan, and then they have, like, let's say they're going from 10 grams of fiber to like 40 grams of fiber, that is a huge increase and it's going to cause disruption for anyone. So I'm trying to do it in more incremental amounts. So maybe 5 grams more this day, 5 grams more that day, so that we're like building up the amount of fiber. And then when beans are soaked, it helps remove the oligosaccharides, which is the number one cause of like gas. And they come out because they're attracted to water. So that can also help cut back the gas-causing elements.
It is important to take a stepwise approach to this. And I just wrote an article on fiber specifically. The recommended amount is like 28 grams. So I usually tell people if you're 25 to 35, you're doing pretty well. I also like to talk about increasing water. But then I do actually a lot of low fiber work for people that have IBS, irritable bowel. Then I'll even do things like soy, because tofu is actually not super high in fiber, which is helpful for some people. What are some signs that you might need more or less fiber? Like, how would somebody know, especially when they're going plant-based?
And inversely, you could also be constipated with too much fiber and not enough water. So kind of, I would play with the hydration and see, like, does that help at all? And then if you have any like big concerns, you're like, this feels so bad, definitely chat with your primary care provider, go to the doctor and get everything checked out.
I will also see people get like bloated, gassy, like sometimes because fiber is not being broken down. So constipation, diarrhea, or just like discomfort, gas and bloating can all be different signs. But I think our conversation is highlighting that it can be kind of hard to know. And that's why it's really important to get some help from a professional as you're trying to figure out what it means for you. This episode is brought to you by Orgain. Let's be real. Every day is a good day for a peanut butter cup. And now you can get that rich, chocolatey, peanut buttery goodness with a boost of plant-based protein. Orgain Nut Butter Protein, inspired by Justin's dark chocolate peanut butter cups, is organic and packs 20 grams of plant protein with no added sugar. Blend it into a smoothie, mix it into your oatmeal, or bake it into your favorite treat. Try Orgain Nut Butter Protein and give your sweet tooth something to smile about. There has been an ongoing discussion, I'm sure that you're part of it constantly, about the term anti-nutrients in plant proteins. That might be like phytates or lectins. How do you approach that?
Things like phytates are cooked, or they're sprouted, or they're fermented, or they're soaked. They are removed significantly from the process. And most of the foods that have phytates are not things we're eating raw anyways. So even just the process of cooking them normally is going to significantly decrease the amount of phytates that are in the foods. And then lectins are another thing that come up too. These are found in beans and grains, and they're destroyed in cooking. The anti-nutrients are getting removed like pretty significantly from all of these foods. So it's not as big of an issue as what it might be made out to seem.
I do wonder if this plays a bit into our food fear culture right now. You don't have to fear plant-based foods because of anti-nutrients, because we're cooking them, and natural plant compounds are a part of plant foods that humans have been eating forever. There's a lot of chatter out there, and the processed and ultra-processed food conversation is very interesting right now. And I get a ton of questions about them, and I think there's a lot of fear. Like a plant-based burger comes to mind. What's your take on those?
Yeah, my take on those is the exact same as what it would be for any like meat product, because you're not having a hamburger every day, but having them every once in a while doesn't really create a significant impact. And a lot of times the plant-based options are going to be lower in saturated fat, depending on the formulation. And then also they're lower in cholesterol too. So for certain consumers, if those are concerns, the plant-based option would be a better choice for them, depending on their like preferences or disease state. There's a great time and place for those. Should you have them every single day and that be your sole source of protein only? Probably not, but you wouldn't hopefully do that with any other type of protein either.
Yeah, I agree. I remember being at an airport and there was an Impossible Burger on the menu. And I was so excited. I was like, that's cool, because I don't eat red meat. And that I got to have one. The person I was with was having a meat burger, and it just felt very inclusive. So I think great for plant-based folks. And speaking of fear, we have to talk about soy. And it's so funny whenever somebody's like afraid or doesn't eat soy, I say, well, what about edamame? And they're like, oh, edamame is great. I eat it all the time. So that's a soy food too. Can you give me a little background about how you approach soy?
I approach it with my patients in just a way that's very educational, because there is so much misinformation about soy and the phytoestrogen, that it's the same as estrogen, which is not true. There are numerous studies about soy foods and the positive effect they have on women when consumed at younger ages and the decreased risk of breast cancer and their later stages of life. So I approach soy with evidence-based information, translating it into something that is easy to understand.
I'm so glad to hear you talk specifically about phytoestrogens. So that is the antioxidants that are in soy. And I think the word phytoestrogen is just super unfortunate. But when the word estrogen is in there, it creates tons of fear. And there were some early studies done on soy and rodents that showed when they eat soy, they have higher circulating levels of estrogen. And that created a lot of fear about human cancer risk and hormone disruption. But it just was not transferable to humans. And so, like you said, huge long-term studies have shown not only safety, but benefit. People are searching for it. They want to know. So, Ryan, you and me partnering up, writing about soy. But will you actually define like what tempeh is and talk about how you use it? Because it's a really cool food.
Yeah, tempeh is a fermented soybean, like a long, dense rectangle. They're compacted together. And the way that I like to do it is slicing it. You can make tempeh bacon from it. So I'll use like liquid smoke, maybe a little bit of coconut aminos, and maybe some maple syrup, kind of jazz it up. You could put it on a skillet. Sometimes I like to throw it into the slow cooker as well. That's my favorite way to use tempeh, but you can also do it in like crumbles, or you could do like tempeh tacos with it. It is different in preparation than tofu. So they're both soy, but they're very different in how you would cook and apply them.
I personally am a tempeh taco or burrito person, and I'll crumble it and put taco seasoning on. And that's how I do it. It's really good.
It is so good. And it's so versatile too. It's a little bit more bitter, I will say, than tofu. So if you try tempeh and you don't like the bitterness of it, a way to get rid of that is just boil it in water. And then once you take it out of the water, it'll be much less bitter. And then it'll be easier to work with too.
So you'll hear about some research and like food science going on regarding algae or mushrooms. What do you know about those trends?
Anytime I see something new plant-based, I will seek it out. So with the mushrooms, like specifically the mycelium of mushrooms, not like a button mushroom or like portobello that you would get from the grocery store, but they're really cool innovations using mushrooms to create protein-rich options like steaks, chicken cutlets, and I play with them all. I think they're really fun. I think they're innovative. Nutrition-wise, they vary brand to brand, and that are really great ingredients, good quality proteins that could be used every single day.
Are you using algae?
I'm not using algae. I did go to a conference last year and they had a vegan collagen that was using algae. It's not on the market right now, but there are a lot of innovations with products like algaes and things of that nature to create plant-based alternatives for products that we don't have good options.
What are you excited about? Recent research, innovations, new products for plant-based foods?
I think it's the collagen. That was such a cool product. And I've been waiting and waiting and waiting for a good like vegan collagen product to come out for years. There hasn't been any. They're all collagen boosters. So primarily like vitamin C, which helps the production of collagen, but it's not like a collagen product. So that's what I'm most excited to see. And I think I'm also just really excited to see research coming out about the benefits of plant-based eating. There's always research to be done, and there's always new research coming out about the amazing benefits of plant-based eating.
Could you talk a little bit about what fortified products are, like fortified almond milk or oat milk?
Yeah, fortified products are products that have minerals, vitamins added to them. A good way that I like to do this, it's like another little science experiment. So what you can do is get a fortified cereal, smash it up, just speed it up and then add water to it and then get a magnet on both sides and then pull it down and you can see like the iron in it or the ones that are attracted to the magnets. And that's exactly what fortification is. So the vitamins and minerals have been extracted and they're in their pure form. They're added into the food so that it helps prevent nutrition deficiencies or gaps that we as consumers will have.
I'm so glad I got to talk to you. I think that your approach truly helps people transition to plant-based diet or become vegan in the right way when they're going to feel better and not make some of the common mistakes that a lot of people do when they're switching to plant-based.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for having me. I love chatting all things plant-based nutrition. I think it's a great topic. We're very aligned on it and I can't wait to talk to you real soon.
I had such a great time exploring the future of plant proteins with Ryan. It's amazing to see how far this space has come with new products, new innovations, and more ways than ever to make plant-based eating easy and accessible. What really stood out to me in our conversation is that plant proteins, just like animal proteins, work best when you get creative and find ways to integrate them into your favorite meals. It's all about understanding what your body needs and making plant-based nutrition work for you.